Welcome to the NOLA Drink Show. Join us as we explore the world of drink, food, and culture in New Orleans and beyond. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody, welcome to the show. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for tuning in to the NOLA Drink Show this week, friends. Really appreciate it. As always, hope everybody out there is doing well. Got a good show coming up for you here today. A little bit more from our Tales of the Cocktail coverage. Taped a good show with my friend Donnie Ronan, and Donnie is with DC Spirits. He is a noted, highly regarded spirits educator, consultant, all-around dude in the spirits world. Good guy. He hails from Oakland these days, near where I was born and raised. And yeah, he comes out for Tales of the Cocktail every year, and we get together typically and do some interesting stuff. And what we're doing this week is we're talking about one of my favorite spirits, Pisco. And we're talking about Peruvian Pisco. There's a stuff that comes out of Chile that they also call Pisco. We're not going to get into that whole debate. We might touch on it a little bit in the show, I think, if I recall. But we're talking about Peruvian Pisco, which is a very special thing. It's a great spirit. It's a delicious spirit. It's highly expressive of its terroir and its production methodology. And there's a strong cultural component to it. It's just very important to Peruvian culture. The producers that make it are very passionate about it. It's just an interesting, interesting spirit with a whole great story and tradition to it. If you listen to the show regularly, friends, you know that we've done shows on Pisco in the past. And a lot of what we've actually focused on, I'd encourage you to go to our website, noladrinks.com, where you can just use the search bar there at the top and just type in Pisco, P-I-S-C-O, and you'll see the different shows that we've done over the past 2.5 or so years, probably done 3 or 4 that have touched on Pisco in one way or another, and a couple of them that were exclusively dedicated to it. And we talk a lot about the cultural components. We talk about some of the sustainable agricultural components to it, some other things. This time what we do with Donnie, a little bit lighter, if you will. We just taste through a whole bunch of bottles, and we taste through some different expressions. Pisco is a grape distillate, and sometimes it comes from a single grape, and sometimes it comes from a blend of grapes. And so we get into that a little bit, and we've talked about that quite a bit before as well, but we do kind of give you some background on that. And this time we're just simply going through some different producers and tasting through them, which is a really fun thing to do, and talk about some of the different expressions and some of the different flavor profiles and that sort of thing, which is really great. I enjoy doing stuff. We don't do that too often anymore on the show, so it's fun every once in a while to bring you that kind of show. I do encourage you to go out and explore the world of Pisco, friends, because it is, as I said, very, very expressive. There's a great deal of diversity. It plays great in cocktails. It tends to be, it's a clear spirit, right? It doesn't see any wood when it comes from Peru. And you can really kind of substitute it in for a number of clear spirit drinks, you know. So what I'm saying is, like, say gin or vodka or something. And also there's some very famous cocktails, of course, like the Chilcano, the Pisco Punch, the Pisco Sour, that are classic drinks that use Pisco. But you can explore substituting Pisco in for many different things, and I encourage you to do so. More and more are available on the market these days, so you can go to your favorite bottle shop or go to your favorite bar and ask them if they have Pisco. And if they don't, they should go get it. That's what I have to say. But yeah, great show coming up. We chat with Donnie for quite a while. If you are listening on the radio, go to noladrinks.com, get the podcast. Why? Because we have an extended chat, another shot with Nola Drinks, that we do every week. And Donnie sticks around for a good while, and we talk about Pisco, as I said, 100 times already. But we talk about a whole host of other things, too. He's just a super interesting guy, a funny guy. We taped this on the last day of Tales, so I'm sure we were both a bit slap happy, needless to say. But it's a really interesting show. And yeah, my voice was pretty deep because it was the last day of Tales, so I was about ready to slow jam the NOLA Drink Show, friends. Hey, we're going to take a little break here on the program, then we're going to come back with our featured interview, Donnie Ronan, talking Pisco. Come on back. We're going to stay here till we see the soul.
If you ever been down to New Orleans, then you can understand just what I mean. Now all through the week it's quiet as a mouse, but on Saturday night they go from house to house.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz with you, UDSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Thanks for listening into the NOLA Drink Show, friends, this week, as always. And always a pleasure here to have my friend, who I seem to see about once a year. Donnie Ronan. Isn't it weird how that works that way? We're actually here. You're hearing this way after, but we're here. Tales of the Cocktail. I'm pleased to be joined by my friend Donnie Ronan. Donnie, how are you?
I'm very well, Brian. Thanks for having me.
Hey, my pleasure, man. It's good to see you. And we're doing a really interesting thing today. We're going to be talking about Pisco here in a minute. But do me a favor, and people who have been listening to the show, they've heard you on with me before, but tell people a bit about your background and what you do.
So I do food, wine, and spirits education. My focus for a long time was small producers and sustainability. And, you know, before it was a thing, but it's really important. I had another really great conversation specifically about Pisco yesterday, and something I had never thought of before that we would have to save for an entire other segment.
Okay.
But like, those are the kinds of conversations that come up when you're speaking and spending time with people who, quite frankly, like kind of give a hoot mm-hmm. about all of these things and want to see things done the right way. And so, you know, luckily that, there's sort of that turn now where the audience actually cares. So before that, then they're asking questions, and it's one of those things where like some producers got in trouble because they weren't, you know, we all know how this works. Like, you know, spirits are purchased and then they're aged somewhere else. And then mm-hmm. someone has their hands on them over here, and it's not a secret, but then all of a sudden, you know, consumers found out and they're like, what? And their heads exploded. And, right.
So they were being misled about the supply chain and the provenance.
Well, that's the whole thing. It's like, were they being misled? It just wasn't out there.
Okay.
Some of them were, some of them weren't. But it's like now that the audience cares and that, you know, that there's been that swing, mm-hmm. it's been really nice actually that there's some accountability. And now for those of us who want to put these great things in front of people, we're getting a lot of questions. And sometimes I have to say, like, I don't know, but let me find out.
Right,
like,
right.
I'm actually really excited that people want to know more and go deep.
Well, Pisco, and we'll get into that in a second, but Pisco is very much something that it's a necessary part of it. It's a necessary part of the story, is understanding its origin and its cultural import and all of that.
Yes.
So you do wine and spirits education, but you do, to be a little bit more specific.
Oh, okay.
The
things that I love to do, this is actually one of them, is like, mm-hmm. My favorite thing to do is to open someone's perspective to something new or something that they thought they knew and then all of a sudden realize that they didn't. So when I get excited about something, or like my mind is expanded by natural substances, I like it, like ideas and thoughts, not drugs, kids, you know?
Yeah.
I want to share that. Right. Mm-hmm. So like, let's say the example I give is, you look at a menu. What if you go to, you know, 10 restaurants, and every time you look at a menu, half the stuff, either I don't know what that is, or it's not appealing, or I don't like it, or whatever. How much more interesting would your universe be if you knew a little bit more about it, or you're like, oh, I like that thing now. Mm-hmm. So for me, not liking things is kind of a bummer. And mm-hmm. also I want people to, even if they don't like love it, at least they'll understand it and be able to choose. Mm-hmm. So I started that with wine years ago, where, you know, Psalms were way up here and guests were way down here. And it's unfortunate, because if they're doing their job right, they're very well-educated salespeople.
Mm-hmm.
And so why would you put any obstacles between the consumer and the consumable,
mm-hmm.
right? That being the wine, yep. right? So, you know, if you have, you know, a little bit of information, or if you've tasted through, you know, some grape varieties, or you've visited a region, you understand what that region does, then you get a little bit of terroir understanding, you get a little bit of, you know, that particular type of grape understanding, and then you figure out what your favorites are. And then that's an easy conversation to have with a somm. Say, well, I'm not very experienced, but I can tell you this is my price point, and here are the things that I like.
Right.
What do you have?
There you go. That's a great way to put
it. So,
yeah.
And it's the same thing with food. Like, I didn't like olives as a kid. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, but I kept trying them over and over, and just like, they grossed me out. And then one day I tried an olive and I was like, okay, that's really good.
It's really been
steeping in olive oil and garlic for 20 years.
Yeah.
So,
there you go.
But then it eased me into that. And then mm-hmm. all of a sudden there was a whole world of other stuff that I liked.
You know, I don't want to belabor this point too much, but I may have even said this to you before. Whenever I would teach a wine class, and still do from time to time, or talk about spirits, I have what I call a 1 degree of separation rule. Mm. So meaning that if you're a California style Chardonnay drinker and your price point is $15, if I try and sell you on an $80 bottle of Barolo,
I've missed in two ways. I'm not 1 degree of separation from your price point, and I'm way more than 1 degree of separation from your preferred varietal and flavor profile.
Oh, yeah.
So what I might be able to get you to buy into is maybe a Sauv Blanc, because the price point's going to be right there. And, you know, it's a white wine, and maybe we would do something that's had a little wood aging and that kind of thing. So to me, it's like we can move the spectrum 1 degree or another.
Right.
And that's, I think, a great way to build up a trajectory for appreciation.
That's a scientific method,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So, like, you have one variation, and then with that one variation, you learn about, like, oh, actually, it's not that style of fermentation that I'm into. It's actually not the, or you know what? It is the buttery. Like, I want that. I want that mouthfeel.
Right.
Okay, great. Right. Because I could taste you on a California Chardonnay that was steel, and had a very different style of fermentation.
Exactly.
And you could absolutely hate it. You're gonna be like, ooh, that's really good. Then we know that it's really that grape that you're into. And like, ooh, if you like the Chardonnay grape, I have a lot of different things for you to try and like.
Precisely. Right? Precisely. Well, let me tell listeners this, because we're talking about Pisco here. Now that we've gone philosophical, kind of, exactly. We framed this in a way. And I'll put the date in the show notes for you, friends, if you want to go hear a little bit more about, see, the cultural import and talking about sustainability in the production of Pisco. I'll reference you to our interview we did about 6 months ago with Lizzie Asher. It's a fantastic interview, and that'll be in the notes for you to find. But Donnie, do me a favor here. Give people like the 2 minute rundown, if we can, just on what is Pisco.
Absolutely. So by definition, if you look it up somewhere, you'll see that brandy is a grape distillate that's had age. So a lot of times people use this term of unaged brandy, which, you know, is a juxtaposition of terms,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
So you really can say grape distillate to be safe, right? And it's not aged, it's rested also, right? So you, for the most part, when you're looking at Pisco, you see a clear spirit that has been mellowed out over time with some, you know, rested in something that does not impart, you know, flavor.
So a neutral vessel we're talking
exactly
about here.
Yeah. And then you're predominantly looking at Peru and Chile, right? Everything we have here is from Peru. And that alone, I mean, if we were to go, say, you know, Napa and Sonoma,
right,
just one little segment of Napa.
Let's put the Chilean stuff aside, because that's another whole conversation. So
understood.
We'll stick to the
But
Peru
I mean, just
thing,
just,
but, yeah,
just on like region alone, just in,
yeah,
in Peru alone,
absolutely,
forget about it. Like,
yep.
And then you have 8 different types of grape that are used, 4 red, 4 white. You have your aromatics and we can keep comparing it to wine back and forth.
Right. Because that's what it is initially out of the gate. Right. So you can, there's 8 varietals that you can use, and then they're labeled, they're either categorized as aromatic or non-aromatic.
Sometimes,
and that can be a little confusing.
It can be. I mean, to simplify it, you have 4 reds, 4 whites, and then also how they're used. So there's either puro, which is pure, and that is like a single variety. Mm-hmm. You have acholado, which is a blend, and then you have mosto verde, which is where they do partial fermentation before they even begin the final process. So it runs the gamut. It's just a fascinating category, and it's just something that I love sharing with people, because they may have had that one Pisco Sour or that one Pisco Punch, which again are drink, you know, cocktails with other things in them,
yep,
and they've never tried it by itself and don't get it, you know, or they had maybe one with like a Pisco they didn't like. It's the same thing with cachaça. Like, it can be really rough for people.
It's a great point.
But then there's 22,000 cachaças, right?
Yep.
And we have like 4 in the United States, or, you know, so being able to just have exposure to the, you know, the 7 that we have here is pretty fantastic.
And this is a great point, because as we're talking about, say, wine, and as you're saying, cachaça, these things, for listeners out there that don't know, the flavor profiles, the expressions themselves of Pisco vary widely, both by virtue of terroir, like you were saying, and by, you know, production methodology, as we know, Donnie, is, you know, it's pretty in Peru. That's why I wanted to put the Chilean stuff aside. Yeah. Is in Peru, it's pretty, you know, it's straightforward in the way that you are allowed to do it.
Mm-hmm. There are a lot of rules,
yeah. And so, but it does. It's you know, think about it. It's an Appalachian consideration, mm-hmm, for those who don't know what we're talking about. But let's why don't we dive right in and try one?
Absolutely.
We got to take a break in about 3 minutes, but that gives us time for one.
No, this is great because you know, again, we can talk about it forever, but mm-hmm, you do have other segments that have talked about like the specifics of Pisco.
Yep.
And now we actually get to talk about flavor profile.
Thank you.
So this first one that I'm handing over to Brian is called Cuatro G's. And we're starting off all on the enchilada side, and the enchiladas are all blends. And this is from Ica Valley, and it's predominantly, I mean, it's high desert. So this is where you'll see photos of people doing like the surfing down the sand dunes and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. It's crazy. And you don't think of, you know, grapes or any sort of agriculture being successful here, but they've been doing it just for a couple of years. So
right,
they know what they're
doing. What's going on. Yeah. I saw a documentary, Pisco Punch, a comeback story. And we actually did a show with one of the filmmakers. This goes back probably 2.5 years, and they got this drone shot where they're coming over the sand. And it looks like, you know, it could be the Saudi Arabian desert or whatever. And they come over, and then all of a sudden it's just the lush green valley. Yeah. And you get, oh, that's vineyards, how they grow grapes. Yeah. So tell us a little
bit
about
this. Well, first of all, we have to start with
yes.
a little toast.
Salud. This is, smells fantastic. So, Donnie, the idea here, too, with the enchilada, you mentioned that it's a blend. So there is some variation in here, what that can mean. Some aromatic, some non-aromatic, mm-hmm. right? And this is where it becomes producer's choice.
Yes. So some of them are actually very open about, well, I don't want to say open because they're not really like sort of shielded about it, but they're really excited to be like, oh, we use this percent of this and this percent of this. It's the same thing if you, like, again, we keep bringing it back to wine.
Yeah, like a red blend, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Like if you go to, you know, Ridge, for example, which is a very famous winery, mm-hmm. like, on the Montebello, they will tell you the percentages of the different grape varieties that they put in because they want you to know. Mm-hmm. And then certain years, they'll release some of those single varieties by themselves as, mm-hmm. right. So this is the same kind of thing. Some of them, like really, some of the Pisco producers really want you to know what they're using. And mm-hmm. some of them are just like, just enjoy this.
Just right.
Yeah.
That's a good way to put it. It's yeah. like you said, they're not being secretive. It's mm-mm. just like, let's not yeah. go too far down this yeah. road. There's no reason to.
I've found over time, and the people who are far more steeped in Pisco than I, like Lizzie being a great example, who makes Machu Pisco. They can, my personal opinion is that I've noticed that a lot are doing, you know, one white, one red
okay.
as a starter for their enchiladas, just to give it like a hearty and an aromatic together. So like it blasts through your face when you first try mm-hmm. it. And then it has like a really nice and like robust base.
Right.
But everybody does theirs differently.
This one rounds really nice. I get a nice pear note on the finish. Very, and it's got that bit of floral that you would expect from many.
Some of them have more of, you know, for those of your listeners who like grappa, because grappa is one of those things that's tough to grapple with. Sorry.
now you're making me want to edit the show. Yeah, yeah. Go.
like grappa can be really rough for people. So that's, you know, that's pumice, right? That's much more of like your mm-hmm. stems and your seeds, and it can be rough for people. But that nose on it is so unique. Or if you've ever had, back in the day, Remy V, like Remy launched that unaged cognac.
Oh, yeah. Right.
That's a Uni Blanc. Mm-hmm. And it was really beautiful. And I think it was like, it was kind of weird for people, but if you like Pisco, like you would love that thing, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So it really, it blends so well with a lot of Southern taste. So it's one of those things that, again, for like your listeners, it's kind of surprising, like, you know, being from the Bay Area, there's a very steeped history of Pisco, especially in San Francisco, but all along the West right. Coast because of the trade routes.
Yep.
But, I've seen more people, the fact that like at the Catahoula Hotel, they've got the bar that's like all about Pisco.
Yep.
I've seen it all over menus here. It's actually kind of crazy.
It's starting to blow up a little yeah. bit, I think, which is good. Let's do this, Daniel. Let's take a little break here on the show. We're going to sample some more Pisco and talk about it, friends. We're going to take a little break here on the Northern Drink Show. Come on, man. Everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you, WDSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Yeah, we're having a good time here on the NOLA Drink Show, chatting with my friend and spirits expert and educator, Donnie Ronan, and we are exploring the world of Pisco, and we're doing this quite literally bottle by bottle, mm-hmm. Donnie. This is the way I like to explore the world of Pisco.
You've got a tough job sometimes, Ryan.
It's really tough. And yeah. I was just telling you some of the shows that we did for our Tales of the Cocktail coverage and serious, important topics. I'm not trying to give anything short shrift because they were really wonderful shows and shows that you've heard some of and will hear more of. But this is fun, man, just to sit around. And like we did last year, we went through the world of Geneva with you kind of bottle by bottle, and now we're doing Pisco. So this is why you need to come more than once a year, man, because I could use these sessions more often.
I'm sure, because otherwise, I know that you're sitting at home twiddling your thumbs with nothing to do.
Precisely, number one.
And number two is, I keep saying that to myself every time I'm here. I'm just like, I need to come back in like December. How about just not like mid to end July?
Yeah.
Would be awesome. As we're like sweating and it's pouring rain outside.
Exactly. He's come back for the one other season that we have.
Sure. Yeah. Totally. But I'll do that.
So what are we trying now?
We started off with the Cuatro G's, which so the first four are all Achelado before we go to Puro, we go to like the single grape. And the second one is the Pisco 100. Which I toasted you with, so I cheated on that one. I went a little early
on that one.
But this is also like an Achelado blend. And they've been around for a while, and it's funny, man. Like, a lot of people know certain weird types of spirits because one brand sort of like championed it. Or there was like sometimes a financial infusion, or sometimes it was honestly like the right people involved. And Pisco 100 has been around for a while, and like, I think that was I honestly think this is the one that like Tony Evogana made his cocktail with the Piscatarian event.
Yeah.
And it's always been like a solid blend. I just don't necessarily see it everywhere, but they've been around for a while and they do good stuff.
This is the first time I've ever tasted this one, actually. Well, unless I had it in Tony's cocktail, which is very likely.
Possible.
Well, I did have Tony's cocktail, so yeah. Pardon me. If you used it, then yes, it's really nice. You get the familiarity that we got from the other Achelado. This one I get a little more minerality. It's a touch less floral to me. I don't quite get that pear note. There's a real lushness to it. I almost get some like white stone fruit kind of thing going on it. And I mean, this is I think a good point between these differences of subtle variations, but they're significant between the different expressions of Achelado.
And these two blends are very different, but they're both from the same region. And the first one, the Cuatro G's, I get a lot of, as you said, floral on the nose, mm-hmm. but then the actual Pisco itself is not. People are really surprised by it.
Yeah.
Right. So, it's not, as you said, as much minerality as Pisco 100, mm-hmm. but it's definitely like dry. And I think it really surprises people. They're thinking that it's going to be kind of a stone fruit liqueur almost thing.
Yeah, no, not at all.
Yeah.
I think in that the minerality part of this one really, really pops for me. And these are, you said this earlier, Donnie, but I think that it, you know, one of my favorite things to actually have at the end of an evening, especially if I'm cocktailed out and I don't want wine or something along those lines.
Is a cheeseburger at Buffa's?
Yes, exactly, exactly. And so then to help me get through that cheeseburger at Buffa's after that's done is just a nice pour of Pisco with just a couple tiny pebbles of ice. Mm-hmm. Really, not a lot, just enough to kind of, especially if it's been sitting out in New Orleans in the bar, you know, it's a little warm, and take the temperature down just a couple ticks. And it's a really pleasant after dinner kind of nightcap sort of drink. Yeah.
It's funny. So, like, you know, a lot of people are accustomed to, if I say nightcap or digestivo or like end of the meal kind of thing, what do people picture? Like, I'll give you guys a minute out in radio land. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay, here we go.
what you probably picture is like somebody with a snifter by a fireplace, like rolling it around in their hands.
Exactly.
So the funny thing is that the snifter for something that's 40% ABV and above is one of the worst glasses for it, because what it does is it captures all of the vapors, the things that like shock your nose and shock your face. And
you go get right the burn,
near,
right?
Yep. Go right in your sinuses and behind your eyes somehow. Mm-hmm. They sneak back there. And as opposed to really short stemmed glassware. But I will say this, grape distillates are really fantastic for like sort of cutting through whatever it is that you ate.
Yeah, right.
I mean, it's not, you know, cognac is not just a sort of post-meal thing because, you know, the French invented heavy food. You know, they're just like, well, our meals are so, you know, lush and rich, so we need something to cut through the fat.
Yeah. So that was a good French accent.
Thank you. It went somewhere else to end. But like, so, you know, they needed to invent a way to like finish it. But in general, grape distillates are great. There's so many American brandies right now and popping up all over
the
place.
Really nice ones.
Western Grace out of Tennessee,
Copper and Kings.
Copper and Kings in Louisville.
No, yeah.
I mean, and everyone's doing fun things, and some are like more Spanish blends and some are more of French style. It's pretty brilliant. I'm waiting for like Metaxa to come back hard, 'cause I love Metaxa.
They were poking around at Tails, I think, from what I heard.
Every once in a while, there's like an activation somewhere, like Portland Cocktail Week. But then I'm like, bring it back, guys.
Well, what's the next one we got here, Donnie?
The next one we have. Here. So we're still the 3 out of 4 of the Achelados. We're on the Quirolo. This is from Santiago.
Okay.
And this is actually, I'm going to hand this to you.
Thank you.
So this is a hand-picked and carefully selected Italia, Negra Criollo, Quebranta, and Muscatel. We have 4 different grape varieties in here, and it's a really terrific combo. So I had only had this recently for the first time, but this is an extremely well-known brand in Peru.
Okay. And the third one you mentioned, Quebranta, is, if I'm not mistaken, that's kind of the most common one that we find in Pisco, right?
Yeah.
Just in general.
Bringing it back again to wine, this is kind of like the Cabernet Sauvignon, right? It's like the hardy one. It grows well. It's easy to blend, and it's a survivor, right? Mm-hmm. And has a ton of flavor, wide range, right? So you find Quebranta not only when you in puros, which we'll actually get to, but as a big blender, right? Just like Cab is, right?
Mm-hmm. So. This one's really interesting too, because one of the things I find that here is I get somewhat of a minerality like we got on the 100, pepper.
Okay, I have to try this one.
Please, yeah, absolutely.
Do you have any cooties?
I don't. Well, okay. Yes, but we're friends, so that's okay. You actually hear that technically, as we mentioned before, at the last day of Tales of the Cocktail, so if I had any cooties, they've been since destroyed.
Yeah, or you just picked up a bunch of new ones.
Or a bunch of new ones that are now like super cooties.
Yeah, exactly. It's gone. We got to call the CDC right away. What's cool about this one, so I'm going to say something to you, which of course, I had this very funny conversation with a friend the other day who's great with her descriptors.
Mm-hmm.
And it was before I even had my first sip. And I'm like, whoa, you're like that bottle. You're like that bottle that gives me the tasting notes before I even get in there. So the black pepper thing, I totally feel you on. Popcorn.
Oh.
Right?
Yeah.
So like if you were to take popcorn and do the like the cracked pepper or the cracked yeast on it, but you get that thing of like, it's not as much the sweet puffed corn, although there is some sweetness in it, but you get that almost like baked.
Yeah. That kind of like the good movie theater popcorn.
Yeah.
That's a really good descriptor.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
It's funny. It's one of those weird things like where you have the Jelly Bellies and you pop the popcorn one and you're like, what is this? Oh, that's really good.
That was really, yeah.
Like hits all your like butter senses and your salt senses and your sweet senses. Yeah.
Did you try this as a complete tangent? But we got about a minute left, so we're going to close out with a tangent on this segment. They had Bananas Foster's popcorn at the Spirited Awards here at Tales the Cocktail last night.
I saw that. I couldn't do it.
I had two because I had to try.
Like two kernels?
Like two kernels. Not two servings. I got two in while my lovely wife was in the bathroom, because then if she came back, she would have been pissed
off. They were like, for the listeners, they were like in big glass vases.
Yeah.
So Brian had two full vases.
Two full vases.
Filled
exactly.
With Bananas Foster popcorn.
Exactly. And let's not even mention the cookies and cream popcorn.
I didn't go there either.
No, I had one. I just wanted to try it. There was curiosity.
Just one vase.
Just one vase. Great. Exactly. Exactly. And we won't go to the Jelly Bellies or the gummy bears or anything like that.
Gotcha.
Well, this one's really good. Let's do this, Donnie. Let's go ahead and take that break that we're talking about now. We're going to come back and taste more. And you're also, if you're listening on the radio, friends, go get the podcast, because that's where the action's at. Donnie's going to stick around and do another shot with Noel Drinks, where we are going to make sure one way or another, come hell or high water, we will finish these Piscos. Well, not finish them, but finish tasting
them.
We'll get there. Cool. Friends, we're going to take a little break here on the Noel Drinks Show. Come on back. We'll be right back. right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you, and we're chatting. Like talking, I combine the word chatting and talking. I do that a lot with Donnie Rodin, who's a spirits educator out of Oakland, California, right from where I came, more or less. We're talking about the very interesting and wonderful category of Pisco. And Donnie, we've got one more achelado that we're going to do. So one more blend out there, friends, the Oro.
So this is the Oro. Oh, actually, you know what? This is a Quebranta.
So it is a puro. Okay.
Yeah, so we actually have four puros and three
achelados. Oh, okay. So now we're going to move into this other style.
And the funny thing is, what's going to be interesting, you know, let's switch it up.
Okay. Let's do it.
Yeah, let's do this guy here. We're going to do the Caravedo first, because the Caravedo is a Torontel. So we've got this. It's a Torontel puro. And so it's a different grape than the last three are all Quebranta puros. And it'll be really interesting. I mean, granted, y'all can't taste them right now.
Yeah, but we're talking about them.
We're talking about it. Yes. You're going to have to trust Brian and
Whoa, let's not go that far.
All right, we'll see how it goes. But you'll see how vastly different, same grape variety from same region with a different hand.
Oh, cool.
It's very interesting. It's great. So let's do the Caravedo first.
Okay.
A lot of people might know this product being from the House of Portone. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they made a really big splash. And what's cool about them as a company is they actually did a really great job of promoting the category. So there have been Pisco events at Tails since as long as I can remember, mm-hmm. where like other people in the category have been like raising each other up, and these guys work very well together, and they're, for all intents and purposes, they're competitors, mm-hmm. and they do a great job of like promoting one another. And Portone came into the scene strong, and they've done nothing but, in my opinion, like a great job for the category, mm-hmm. and always talk about other brands and always talk about the varieties that other people are making. It's been pretty cool.
This is what impresses me, and I thank you for saying that, Donnie, because different presentations that I've seen over the past two or three years at Tales of the Cocktail with put on by the Peruvian Trade Commission Miami office, if I remember right. Mm-hmm. Exactly as you said, and I think there's an intelligence there behind this, that, and you know this from your experience in wine, smart wineries, especially small wineries and wine regions, realize, I hate using this hackneyed expression, but a rising tide raises all ships.
Yeah, absolutely.
And what's good for the, in this case, and it's so important, I think, with Pisco, is trying to get people to get interested in the category, and the best way to do that is work together as opposed to, you know, bickering and infighting.
Absolutely. And you see people, you see other categories that do it in another way, and mm-hmm. it's never successful. Mm-mm. Like, I mean, this is a very small universe, and you'll hear somebody talking smack about someone else. I'm like, A, they're going to find out in 2 minutes.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And B, hey, how's it going? Welcome. They're going to find out in 2 minutes. And B, like, what's the purpose? It just makes you look like a little bit of an ass.
Yeah.
I can say ass.
Yes.
Yeah. Like,
yes.
Look like a jackass.
Yes. You can say that too.
Yeah. There's no like donkey society that's going to come after me.
I don't know. Okay. We'll reference that show with Jackie Summers. If you, I can't promise you that you've not already heard it or we'll hear it later. But we'll let you know what we mean. Yeah, this one's really nice, man. Yeah. I find it's this one's a little, we get back to kind of the floral thing here on this. And, there was something that was really popping on this to me too. Almost like a honey. That's it. Kind of like a honeysuckle note going on.
So if you think, when you think of Torontel, like Torontel and Italia, I think are my two favorite for like introducing people to Pisco, because they're so interesting and not what people think of as mm-hmm. Pisco. And they have that sort of, so imagine like the kind of flowers that like bees would go to like in your garden growing up. It's the kind of thing where like, you know, kids playing in the garden, they're always like, they don't want to get stung, but they were kind of like the happy flowers where like bees don't really care whether or not you're there.
Right.
They're like so happy with those. And those are like the aromas and the tastes and things that are, to me, related to both Torontel and Italia, because they're just so interesting.
It's a really good analogy. And I think, I kind of mentioned that honeysuckle note again on the palate. I sort of get a lavender, almost jasmine-y kind of note on the nose. But that's a really nice expression.
And sorry to interrupt.
No, not at all.
What it made me think of is that there's a lot of brands. I mean, again, Pisco is not a category that people know as well, but there's a lot of brands out there who do different styles of whatever it is that they produce. Sometimes they're big brands. You know, a great example actually is like Tequila Patron, right? People know it as being this huge brand, but they also have like their, you know, Tijuana only. They also have their Roca line where people try them and they're like, oh, I didn't know that you guys made stuff like this. But a lot of these Piscos, like in fact, all of the four Puros we have here all have other varieties, other styles, and they're all fascinating. So if there's one that you try that you're like, I'm not really into it, try another one. Because it is the combination of the terroir, the grape, and the hand of the maker. So you might find that you really like the style of the maker, even though you don't necessarily always like Torrontel or like Quebranta.
That's thank you for saying that too, because I think, and we want to get to one more here before we close out the radio portion of the show. You know, you know how this is, Donnie, where people will say, I don't like Chardonnay. And that's a bold blanket statement about a grape that is made in so many different ways and in so many different locations you probably don't hate the grape. You probably hate the expression that you've tasted. And I think exactly as you're talking about with Pisco, that there's a huge variation here in these flavor profiles. And if you generally like this kind of spirit in a broad sense, there's something there for you. Let's do this. Let's do this one here real quick, man. The next one. So do we have another Torrontel? Is that right?
Yeah. No, there's just the one Torrontel. Okay. And then we have three Quebrantas now.
Okay. You know what? Let's do this because we got about 3 minutes left before we have to close out this part of the show. Mm-hmm. Donnie's going to stick around for the podcast only portion. We're going to get through these other three, and it's a joy. Tell people briefly about the cocktail box thing we got going on.
So, you know, for those of you who are listening or just like, oh, this sounds really cool, or you've had like a little bit of exposure to Pisco, what a lot of times people just know Pisco Punch or they just know Pisco Sour. Mm-hmm. And those are both great cocktails and can be made in a variety of different ways, but like, what do I do with this thing? So there's a company called Shaker and Spoon, which is just shakerandspoon.com with the and in there. Mm-hmm. And there, it's a cocktail subscription kit that comes with everything but the booze, right? So there's no brands attached to it. It comes with everything you need in this little box, that plus a 750 of whatever
that you would go out and get just
that you would go out and get on your own. Yeah. Right. Would make 12 different drinks. So it's three bartenders from around the world. Each one makes a cocktail with that same base spirit. Nate Dalton, who was at the Catahoula Hotel at the Pisco Bar, one of the three guys who made the drinks for the Pisco box, which, you know, comes out in August and is sort of going to be available after that. But it's really fun because people like, oh, I don't know what to do with this thing. And then this box arrives and then all of a sudden you're making 12 different cocktails, three different cocktails each with enough ingredients to make four a piece. Mm-hmm. And boom, you've got a whole party with this like spirit that you didn't even know that much about before. And like everyone thinks you're a bloody genius. It's amazing.
That's awesome. It's a great way to host a party or a great way to explore it on your own, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So cool. Well, Donnie, we got about a minute and a half left. So tell people where can they connect with you, man?
I mean, best place is, you know, you can always email me. It's imbibe@dcspirits.com. Or you can see like what it's, stupid. I'm not a social media guy. I have a very like one directional relate. Like people will message me on Facebook and I'll see it like 3 months later and be like, I'm really sorry, I don't have my notifications on. But you can see at least like some of the idiot stuff I'm up to on Instagram at dronen, dronen.
Awesome. Yeah. Perfect. Yeah. Well, hey, man, I really appreciate you taking some time here to chat with us.
My pleasure.
You're sticking around for another shot with Noel Drinks. Really, you're not going anywhere. But if
it's all a lie.
It's all a lie.
It's a radio fabrication.
Exactly. We're going to bring a doppelganger in who sounds just, looks nothing. He's not really a doppelganger. He will look nothing like Donnie, but he'll talk just like him.
Hello.
So, hey, friends, if you are listening on the radio, please go get the podcast. You can find it on noladrinks.com, our website, and that will link you to any of your number of favorite podcast platforms, too numerous to list, or I probably just can't really remember what they all are right now, but that's the best way to go check out the show, friends. So, hey, if you're listening on the radio, remember to be kind to one another, use your turn signal, and until next time, cheers, y'all.
like this. I said, I call your name, but no one came. Now I see you become just like the company you keep. Then he said, all these saints and all these sinners will try.
Everybody, thanks for sticking around for another Shot with Nola Drinks. Brian Diaz here with you as always. Hope you're enjoying the conversation we're having there with Donnie Ronan talking about Pisco. We're going to bounce right back to that interview in just a second. We're going to talk, of course, about Pisco, as I just said, and we're going to talk about some other stuff and more on how to enjoy it. And we taste a couple more expressions and some good things like that and sort of wax philosophical, if you will, which is what we typically do when Donnie is on the show. Here we go. Yep, another Shot with Noel Drinks, friends. Thanks for listening in this week. We are talking about one of my very favorite spirits categories for a whole host of reasons. Yeah, I'm really stumbling with English now at this point. Here, last day of Tales of the Cocktail. You're hearing it way later. I could be dead, Donnie, by the time people are actually hearing this show.
I really hope not.
I hope not, too, but yeah. It's entirely possible. This could be sort of a posthumous compilation of shows that somebody else had to put together.
It's a really great positive way to start off this segment.
So, yes, here we are, and we're chatting about
I like to
Pisco.
Think of myself as like a pretty positive person, and then I'm just like, yeah, well, we started the show talking about the fact that you might die soon. But listen, honestly, for an almost dead dude, you look fantastic.
Hey, thanks, man. You actually told me that when I walked in, and I said it's an absolute, because we're not having the party, it's an absolute bullshit facade. Because inside, it's a different story.
Yeah. No, I the term I used was fresh.
Yes, fresh. That's it.
It's
thank
not
you.
Something that you normally like at the, on that on this on any Sunday, much less at this particular Sunday.
Yes.
Yeah. It's not really a thing. That's what right. I originally asked you. Hey, by the way, are you going to be doing like a video segment? And then that was sort of like the subtext of that is, do I need to wear pants?
Yeah, exactly. And right. as I said to you too, I said sometimes you know when you know someone, you know why they're asking that question. Like it's not because of where we need to set up to have proper. You know, visuals
well, no,
and background
too,
for video.
That too, that
oh,
too.
Yeah, no. It was about
totally
the pants.
Was.
It was totally about,
it was
the,
about
pants.
The pants.
Yeah, don't lie to me, man.
Like, should I be behind something? Or am I? Yeah,
right,
that's fine.
Right.
I could have been on that side and still not wearing pants.
Exactly. It's like a Skype conversation where you put on a sport coat, but then you don't have pants on.
Yeah, but and almost intentionally.
Exactly.
Because you can.
Because you can. Mm-hmm. This is why I do radio, man.
Understood.
Well, hey, so, you know, one thing I wanted to mention to you, Donnie, just kind of an anecdote, but... you were at, there was a great tasting room that was put on at Tales of the Cocktail this year, featuring Pisco. And it is, as I mentioned, one of my very favorite categories. And I was getting geared up. It was one of the things I didn't have a chance to get to a lot of the different tasting sessions and things just because of taping schedule and whatnot. But, that one I marked and I'm going to that one. There's no way I'm going to miss it.
They always do a good job.
They always do a good job. And it's a great show. It's a great exhibition of the category, but you know, I'm kind of thinking and I'm going, man, but got to get there because it's going to be crowded and I want to be able to taste through all the stuff. And I don't mean this in any sort of disparaging way. It hit me when I got in there a couple things. One, you know, I realized that I'm kind of a nerd and this is why people need to hear more about the category mm-hmm. because it really wasn't as crowded as I was expecting it to be. Because
oh,
I think
it got,
did it
nuts.
Okay. Because yeah. you know, it, you know, it's one of those things where I think, you know, we kind of get lost in the world of what we do and we're very excited about something and maybe other folks that haven't been exposed to it or haven't had the opportunity to be exposed to it. And this is kind of where I'm going with this. Like Pisco, you maybe haven't had the chance to taste it because you don't really find it all over the place at, you know, grocery store, liquor departments, for example. And it's something that's worth seeking out. And the other thing just with that tasting room that was, makes it always so worthwhile. And I think it kind of reflects on what I'm talking about here. The number of people like yourself that are, you know, heavy hitters in the industry were all in that room. There were a lot of very, you know, noted cocktail educators and authors and things like that participating in this event. And I think that speaks volumes to the category as well.
There, I mean, it's an old category. I think,
yeah.
You know, like we were talking before, like one of my favorite things that's not only work, but also just personal passion is to like open up someone's perspective.
Yep.
You know, what they choose to do with it is, it's their choice. Right. But to give someone an additional option is always great. Cause mm-hmm. then they see a great example in how you were talking about the fact that like you come in with a sort of like, you know, nerdy optimism. You're like, mm-hmm. oh, I'm really looking forward to this. It's Pisco. It's mm-hmm. exciting. I can't tell you the number of people who I met at that event who were like, what's Pisco?
Oh, great. Okay. Yeah. It's good to hear.
And so in my brain, I'm just like, why did you walk in here? Mm-hmm. Right. But my immediate thought was like, that's very exciting mm-hmm. that like you just knew that it's Tails and you heard this would be great. Or honestly, you just randomly walked in, although it was kind of out in the corner over there. So they had to end up, it was a little bit of a destination mm-hmm. and they walked in, they're like, oh, this is super cool. What's this all about? And it's got kind of like a South America vibe and like the, you know, the, all the colors and the music was great.
Traditional costumes.
Yeah, exactly. And then of course, Brother Cleve was spinning the music and he did an amazing job and he's a huge like Pisco nerd fan.
Oh, for I didn't many know that. Years. Okay. Yeah.
And so it was really great to have people come in and they're like, I'm excited about this. And they weren't just like pounding cocktails. They were like, what's this about? And we got to have a chat about it. Just like we did our little 2-minute summary at the beginning. Mm-hmm. You don't even have that time. Someone who like either comes to a table or you bump into them at an event. Like you don't have that time. You have to give them the very brief grape distillate. Everything in here is from Peru. There are, you know, 8 different grapes and it's really delicious. Do you like cognac? Do you like grappa? Do you like anything that's made from grape? Give this a shot. It's super clean. It's very aromatic and you're going to love it.
Absolutely.
And they do.
You know, and they do. And you know, and I want to highlight this too. I mean, I guess we kind of referenced it in a way when we were talking about the cocktail kit. Pisco is a great base spirit for cocktails. And there, and as you mentioned earlier, there's the Pisco Sour, Pisco Punch, and these are in the canon of great classic cocktails. And many of you have had them or have heard of it. There's all kinds of Chilcano springs to mind, which is a very also pretty noted cocktail, but you know, maybe not quite as popular, very refreshing, very nice. But I think there's so many different things that you can do in the cocktail world with Pisco because it has, you know, it's a distillate, it's a grape distillate. It brings some character to the table, but I think in a weird way, unlike certain categories, it plays nice with the other little kids in the sandbox very well.
The one that we were tasting earlier that has sort of a popcorn thing to me. Like
yep.
my immediate thought was, what can I do with that in a cocktail? And I'm seeing this more now where people are actually, I'm much more of a savory person than a sweet person. And so I'm always going to, if I see something on a menu, I'm like, that sounds weird. I'm mm-hmm. going to go for it. Mm-hmm. Like it's going to jump out and I'm going to dive in, especially if it's like strange and savory. Like I made weird sandwiches as a kid that would, you know, piss off my parents and like weird out my friends. And to me, like seeing something like that, I want to see what process your brain went through in order to put these flavors together. That sounds cool.
Yeah.
So, you know, I smell something like that where I get that popcorn thing and I want to do like sweet corn juiced. So, you know, like you'll be in like a town square in Jalisco somewhere where they'll do like the elote
yeah.
But it's different. Like before they pile on like the cheese and the chili and all that stuff, at the end of the day, it's just that corn that comes out of a big boiling pot mm-hmm. and it has that smell and it has that taste. And it's like, it's more than a little bit sweet, but it's still like earthy and it's fun. So I see that once in a while pop into cocktails, and when it's done right, it's done very well. Same with carrots. Mm-hmm. Like if it's yeah. done well and if it's a good fit, it's great. Otherwise, it's either going to like taste like dirt or it's mm-hmm. going to be too sweet.
Right.
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 Or beet,
I was just going to say that. Yeah, exactly.
There's a cocktail that I had in Reno that was like a beet sour that like, mm-hmm. of course, looked beautiful. And I'm sure that they thought about that. They're like, it'll be so perfect for Instagram. Mm-hmm. Right? but it was a stupidly good drink.
I've had a few really good beet cocktails, mm-hmm. by the way, in the past couple of years, and it does it, like. And you have to balance that sort of sweetness versus that sort of earthiness of it and stuff like that. But yeah, there's some. Yeah, that's great. I think in a lot of the stuff that Pisco can be something you could be very creative with. So if you're so disposed to make weird sandwiches like Donnie did as a little kid, get a bottle of Pisco and play around with it.
Yeah, and you know, we were talking about the shaker and spoon thing before. It's like, you're getting into the minds of three very creative people from different parts of the world, mm-hmm. right? So this only goes to people in North America, and it's a bummer because so many people asked about it who are here from other countries right now, and like, you can't ship something. There's no booze in it, but mm-hmm. you can't ship something that has like whole lemons, whole limes.
Yeah, it has
you can
fresh produce.
So
yeah.
We tried to do something for Canada once because there were a couple of Canadian bartenders who made these insanely good drinks. And so even to ship it without the produce, where you make it less expensive because you can cut that cost out.
Okay, yeah,
it's still like gonna get stopped by customs maybe, or it's gonna take forever. And like, they're definitely like, you know, handmade syrups in it that came from that bartender's brain that suddenly had to be produced for several thousand people. And so like, they're, you know, they're in an FDA approved kitchen, and it's like sealed and everything, mm-hmm. but still, you don't want, you want it to take 2 days. You don't want it to take 2 weeks. So,
right.
But for the most part, like, you're getting to try these like flavors and these ideas from different places in the world. One of them being Nate Dalton here in New Orleans. And whose cocktail I told you before is called The Last Guinea Pig in Cusco. But the, you know, the great part is like, I was looking at this card, and so one of them is, and I won't give away, you know, for those of you who are going to get the box, there's a cocktail called Elysian Fields by Sean in Richmond, Virginia. And he uses, you know, lavender sugar, and with a lavender honey syrup that he made, fresh lemon juice, saline solution, and then these little dried lavender buds. So you might think, oh, wow, it's over the top, but guess what? What was one of the things that you smelled?
Yeah, we were talking floral and lavender.
Exactly.
Yeah,
it like pops right out. And it, yep, you'd think that it would be like excessive, but it's not. It's like, mm-hmm, this incredibly balanced drink. And then there's another one that has like, you know, a passion fruit rosewood syrup.
Wow.
Right? And then acid phosphate and saffron extract. I mean,
wow,
there, it's like stuff that you're not just going to pop out of your ear at home. Mm-hmm. It's like these fun things that you get to try. And then the beauty is like, next time you go to, it's open your perspective, mm-hmm, you know, without, mm-hmm, me sitting there and like nudging you to do it. And then you go right to a bar or restaurant, and you're just like, I just had a drink that I made at my house with, you know, with acid phosphate or with saffron extract. And you see it on a menu, you're like, I want to try that now. What's your brain doing with that ingredient?
Right. That's a good way to put, yeah, it. Acid phosphate's a thing, man.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fun ingredient in cocktails.
Yes.
I think you can actually get it on Amazon now, right? I think it was harder to procure before.
You can. So, you know,
not to plug Amazon, but
no,
you
know,
but you buy it online. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. But like, you know, Darcy did those years ago, as part of his company. And it, now you can buy it through other places. It's called, it's, if you, I think he's on Twitter as Art of Drink.
Okay.
And he is sort of like that pre-cocktail nerd, super thoughtful and wanted to dissect these things. Like, how do we do these? And has helped. So he's one of those guys that has helped so many people figure stuff out for their menus. And I hope that they credited him, but he also started making some of these products like the acid phosphate, or, mm-hmm, or I think he did a, like a lactic acid as well.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Which is, it's such like an interesting texture ingredient for cocktails.
Yeah, 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 absolutely. One tip for if you're making drinks at home and you order a bit of acid phosphate, don't overdo it.
Oh, no.
No. A couple drops will do you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's one of those ingredients, or Pisco is one of those ingredients that I really love letting people play with. So, mm-hmm, we were talking about before in the last segment is that, you know, we have four puros, four like, you know, pure single grape variety,
yep,
Piscos. And each one of these four companies also make a wide range.
Mm-hmm.
So, right. I mean, we had the Caravera Tarantelle, but they also do an Acciolato. They also do a Quebranta. And then like Oro Pisco does in Italia. I think they're probably the ones that do the widest line.
Yeah. Okay.
Of different, grapes. And then Barcel has an Italia that is, it's the same bottle, but with like a green label on it.
Oh,
that
I have
stuff
tasted
is
that one before.
Idiotic.
Yeah. That
I
is
mean,
very good.
All these,
yeah,
guys have their specialties. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And where we ended before was you have three major components to look at. You have the grape variety, the style of the maker, and then of course the terroir,
mm-hmm,
right? So you might find that you're like, I really like the way this person, this guy or this gal makes this particular, or makes Pisco. I like the way they do it and I like all their stuff. But then you might try someone else's Italia and be like, I don't like that as much. It's too floral. It's too over the top.
Right.
Right. Or you might find that I really like everyone's Italia and I don't like anything but Italia,
mm-hmm.
right? So it just totally depends. And just tasting these three Quebranta by themselves is going to be a trip.
Yeah, let's do it. So let's taste the first one. That's the Oro, correct?
Yeah, go for it.
This guy?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
For those of you in Radio Land, the Oro you may have seen on a back bar, it looks kind of like a tall, narrow isosceles triangle, you know, pyramid thing.
Yeah.
Kind of like the old like Galliano bottles, but wider at the base.
Those are good geometry.
They're easy to spot.
Like how you got isosceles triangle and pyramid.
Well, you know, man, you said at the beginning that you wanted to talk about more serious topics, and I figure like throwing a little bit of you know, science and math and geometry.
Ancient Greek and ancient Egyptian mathematics.
Absolutely. Well, now that, you know, Bill Nye, the science guy, is dropping F-bombs all over the place.
Right.
I feel like, you know, at the very minimum, if we do a splash of this, that, and the other, we can get it. We can get away with it.
We are truly Renaissance, mm-hmm. Renaissance men here on the Nolan Drink Show. And, you know, I mean, we were kind of, and I, you know, this will be the perfect time to bring this up, what I was referencing before, in regards to a mutual friend of ours, Jackie Summers from Jack from Brooklyn, makes the fine Sorrel liqueur, told a story on the show that referenced the term goat fucker. So
we can say it now?
Yeah, we're on the podcast part, right. So we can say that. So we've now moved, you know, I really wanted to swing the pendulum really far, Donnie, going from isosceles triangle to goat fucker. I just thought that would seem our bandwidth of what we can actually do here.
We can do it in 1 degree, so it's not a stretch. It is not a stretch.
Well, this one's really nice. I like this expression. This one, and maybe I'm wrong about this. This one is a little hotter, not in a bad way, but I'm getting a little more alcohol on this one just when I taste it, and certainly not in any sort of unpleasant fashion. Just seems a little warmer to me.
Well, we just dove into, but like, try the mouthfeel so much bigger because we just dove from Torrontel into like Quebranta.
Right.
Right. And what we were saying before was Quebranta, again, this is what I do in my mind. I don't know how, you know, Pisco makers or people who are real professionals in this particular category describe it. But to me, it's like the Cabernet Sauvignon of the grapes used. Mm-hmm. It's the one that you see the most often in blends and enchiladas,
mm-hmm.
and is the hardiest, and that's the way it grows, and that's why you see it more often, mm-hmm. because it's more readily available.
Mm-hmm. This is a great cocktail expression, right? Because this is going to stand up to things. And
so this one's, the ones we went through have jumped around. They've been between 40 and 42, and this one's 41, so it's not particularly hotter than the others.
Okay.
But yes, we went from Torrontel into Quebranta, this being the first Quebranta, and it mm-hmm. comes through with a punch.
Yeah.
But it also is like big mouthfeel, mm-hmm. like a lot of texture.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Well, here,
it is a great cocktail pisco.
Yeah, I think this is a really good one to maybe even like kind of a good one to start with if you're kind of new to pisco and making mm-hmm. cocktails with pisco, because it's just going to kind of give you, as you're saying, that sturdy platform without so much of some of the other kind of nuances that we might have found in some of the other ones that you have to really play off of or with when you're making a drink.
Right. Because it has so many layers in and of itself,
mm-hmm.
right? Yeah. So you can drink it by itself, but then you throw it into a cocktail. You've almost like added ingredients in there without adding ingredients.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, if you find one and you taste one, you're like, ooh, I taste, hibiscus, or, you know, I taste like, you know, peanut sauce. You never know the kind of like weird things that are going to come through.
Mm-hmm.
And then as soon as you taste it, you're like, ooh, I've now added an element of flavor into my drink without having to actually add another ingredient. So it allows you to still do, for example, a four-ingredient cocktail, like a very simple three- or four-ingredient cocktail, mm-hmm. where one of my ingredients already has a bunch of layers.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a great way to think of it is people were doing, like, infused vodkas for years because it was... I mean, this is before, like, flavored vodka really hit hard, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. but sort of similar because, like, oh, this is popular, then this is going to work for our guests, right? And it was very easy to do. You could always like take a watermelon and turn a bottle upside down and see what happens, mm-hmm. right? And then, of course, the people eat it at the picnic, and then you see what happens.
I got in trouble in high school for that.
No doubt. No doubt.
That's a story for another time. That's actually never been told on the show and probably never should be.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. So, sorry, guys. We're going to talk about it after this is over. But what's cool about that concept is like there's a lot of people who are like, doing very interesting things with the spirit to still keep the drink simple so that mm-hmm. there are only, you know, three or four ingredients, but one of those ingredients has a bunch of layers. So like people who are doing fat washes on whiskey, people who are doing infusions on gin, or a gin like the, you know, the con limon.
Yeah.
The,
okay.
You know, the gins that are actually already have like lemon peel in them. Mm-hmm. So you get that big citrus blast mm-hmm. on top of whatever the botanicals are. So it's a very cool thing that people, they think about it with gin all the time, but they don't think about it with Pisco.
Yeah. And that's a really good point. Cause that's gin's a really good example. I think when people you'll know out there, when you'll taste different styles and different, just even different makers of gin, especially when you get, you know, kind of move away from the London dry style where it's just very juniper. And there's obviously variation in there, but there's so much stuff out there that, you know, if you had a Hendrix versus a London dry gin, mm-hmm. those are going to bring two very different expressions to the table. And it's going to bring a very different set of taste to a Negroni, for example, or something along
Absolutely.
Those lines.
Yeah. And, you know, what's cool about those two examples that you gave is, you know, you'll have people who, although Hendrix is from Scotland, they consider it almost like a New World gin. It's for someone
much.
Who's a London yep. dry person, mm-hmm. or honestly, if you're old and English, you're going to be like, you know, that's for the kids. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a lot of harumphing and like, well, that's not for me, you know? Right? But, you know, same thing. They're another brand who you have to give great credit for, even if you're not a cucumber person, even if you're not like, you know, a rose person. Like if those are not the type of botanicals that speak to you, you can't deny the fact that that opened up gin to so many more people.
Without a doubt.
Right?
Yep.
And the funny thing is, it's only 44%. And then you go look at like a Tanqueray, which is 47, mm-hmm. which is much more like, I mean, higher in ABV and juniper forward and everything. Mm-hmm. But like 44%, still no joke. Like,
oh,
it's
absolutely.
Not like
they
didn't like dumb it down. Yep. They didn't like, you know, come out with something that's like under four. I mean, they still put out a gin that stands up in cocktails and things like that. But mm-hmm. they opened people's minds to the fact that, ooh, you can do this. And now, of course, there's a bazillion out there.
Absolutely.
Of people who are doing new things.
This is a tangent, but I'd like to hear you speak to it, Donnie, just because of your experience and perspective on the industry. Having these conversations about the vodka category. And I hear a lot of people griping about some of the new vodkas that people are putting out that have some, you know, some character to them, some flavors that are a bit different and things like that. And I'll, you know, get certain folks that I'll encounter, certain bartenders, and they kind of bitch and moan about it because they'll say, you know, vodka is supposed to be odorless, colorless, tasteless kind of consideration and just bring some booze to the drink. And my thought is always, well, I mean, really kind of twofold here is that I think, you know, how many of those do you really need in the marketplace then, right? You know, if that's the whole thing, then, you know, you could probably do the job with one or two.
Agreed.
And, but, you know, I think, especially here in the United States, I think we kind of don't really realize and we kind of do a bad job in understanding that there's a huge world out there of clear spirits. And Caraveto comes to mind, Geneva that we did the show last year. Go check out that show, Friends, last year in July that we did. Another really good example. Cachaça, some of those that are non, you know, wood aged and things. Just a whole number of things out there. And I think kind of trying to say, well, there's only a small number of categories out there. You know, vodka should be this. I think it's kind of, I don't know. I mean, gin, you know, some people argue that gin is just, you know, botanicalized vodka, right? And
so. It's, you know, that's kind of like the sort of, you know, bartender or host joke where someone's just, you know, someone will come up to the bar and they'll say anything but gin. Mm-hmm. Like, you have the run to make me whatever you'd like, anything but gin. So, of course, I think like everyone's inclination is to, or at least mine anyway, I'm like, how do I sneak gin into you?
Yeah.
Like, I want to get gin into your face.
Right.
I want you
right.
to taste it and like it. And like, I feel confident enough to know that there's something about it you're going to like, mm-hmm. right? Or in some cocktail or some form. And it's not always true. You know, like someone may have had a really bad experience with like something they drank out of a plastic bottle before they should have. And they're sort of forever ruined the brand part is not important because the same thing, gin and tequila are the two that people have the most like, ugh, about. Right. They just had some bad experience with some very low quality of either of those
right.
and had too much of it. And then, you know, they smell it from a mile away and they get like gag reflex. Right.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But gin is one of those things that's like, and tequila also, there's so much variety in those two categories and people just don't, they don't get it. So there's one thing where someone's like, anything but gin. And you're like, okay, do you like vodka? They're like, oh, I love vodka. You're like, great. I have this really cool flavor of vodka you're going to like. Right? I mean, it's like, it's funny to us, but it's such a dick move.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And it's, my favorite way is actually a South Side. So people are like, oh, what's that? Right? And then even people who know cocktails who might not know South Side, it's really easy to describe. You're like, okay, well, it's gin, it's lemon, it's sugar cane, it's mint, it's shaken, and then I add soda water to it. And they're like, oh, so it's like a gin mojito with lemon. And you're like, yes. Yeah. Right? And introducing that drink to someone with the right gin, they're going to be like, this is like my favorite thing. And then I will say, congratulations, you know, like gin.
No, exactly.
Right?
Good one.
But I never want to do that on the first drink. I want to try them out on something different first.
Okay.
Right? So if I'm like, okay, do you like bitter? And they're like, yes. Do you like Campari? Yes, I do. Well, I'm going to make you a Boulevardier.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Okay, I'm going to make them a Boulevardier. That's and then they sneak them into a Negroni, right?
Yep.
But it's after, mm-hmm. you know, you have to have that level of trust first, so then you can ask them, okay, you can choose to not tell them about the gin thing. You can be like, I'm going to make something else for you that's similar but different, and you tell me whether or not you like it. If you don't like it, it's on me.
Yeah.
Right? Good Obviously, one. You have to have the... you know, the leeway to do that.
Yeah.
Of course.
Right. Now,
but
I need to correct something I said because I'll now forget. And I was going to say, I didn't want to sound like an idiot because, that ship sailed years ago. But I said Caravedo, and, what I actually meant was a Polugar, which is a caraway clear distillate from Poland, I believe. But yeah. I was looking at the Caravedo bottle. So that made me say that. And then it was caraway, and not that anybody even pays attention to what I said, but now I feel better. So I've said what I need to say there.
No problem. Yeah, no problem. And I mean, if you don't worry about sounding like an idiot, I'm going to do that for you on the show. You're
beautiful,
be fine.
Thank you. Well, let's taste the bar song, man. Let's talk about this one.
Dive in.
Cool.
So it's funny, these, you know, these four puros that we have here are just they're not only do they come from companies that make a lot of different product. They also make Achelado, but they do such a good job of promoting the category overall, right?
Mm-hmm.
And again, Quebranta being that sort of like hardy grape, but like I look at these bottles and I see the people that are attached to them, and so like I see Barsol and I see Diego, right?
Yep.
And I see Machu Picchu or the bottle, and I immediately think of Melanie Lizzie, yep. Right? And same thing with Caravedo, like John Schuller, who's been pushing the entire category for years before this brand even existed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, it's been so fun to have these people as educators and promoters of the category, not just of their brands. And even though like I met them individually as part of their brands,
mm-hmm.
And they... especially with such like a small niche category, everyone's fighting for shelf space at bars. They're always out there promoting category. It's really impressive. Mm-hmm. And for over a decade already that I've known all of them and that they've been doing that thing, you know?
You know, I thank you for saying that too, Donnie, because we were talking about how, you know, this idea of promoting the category, raising the profile of Pisco is good for everybody involved. And we talk about how they, you know, kind of come across oftentimes as non-competitive. The only way that, and I'm sure they are to a degree in reality, but the only way that I've ever seen them publicly be competitive is simply how passionately they actually speak about it when they speak in turns. And I've seen that happen a couple different times. Mm. You know, there's this, a great deal of enthusiasm, each with their own sort of style behind that enthusiasm. But you get that passion when they talk about it. And actually, Diego's been on the show, Johnny's been on the show, and one half of Lizzie and Melanie have been on the show, two great sisters, the Asher sisters, and Lizzie was on the show. And all of them just brought such a great deal of enthusiasm about the product
and
the category.
They don't hate what they do.
Mm-mm.
Yeah. This one's funny. So the Barsol Quebranta brings me back to one of the earlier Acheladas we have, because it has that sort of like toast on it.
It's almost like... to be honest with you, I get almost a peanut nutty, like a peanut oil kind of note to it.
I think like peanut butter and butter.
Yeah,
you know, like I get the toast first because it just has that thing. Plus, mm-hmm. I feel like there's some of that happening in this home right now.
No,
there may be actually being like toast being made right now, but it has awesome.
That's one of our hosts here is kind enough to let us sit in his living room. Brent Rosen, and he's now leaving. Bye, Brent.
But that's funny. Like, there was years ago, we did an event at the previous spot for the Museum of the American Cocktail. And same thing, both Tony and Dale are huge Pisco fans. I mean, they always participate in whenever there's like a Pisco thing. Mm-hmm. And I want to say that like one of the cocktails they made for that event was a Pisco cocktail, because you can't talk about cocktail history without talking about Pisco.
Yep.
And it's just one of those things. Just the same thing with like, you know, Genever. It pops up. Sometimes there's even just Dutch gin in some old books, mm-hmm. and sometimes it'll say Genever, right? Mm-hmm. But you can't talk about like cocktail and spirit history without talking about those two categories. Mm-hmm. Whereas like vodka doesn't show up at all. Right.
Right.
You know, it doesn't not matter. That's one
really
of our,
right.
You're not, and you're not in this seeing, country and yeah. you know, Baijiu either. Right. It doesn't matter that it's, you know, one of the most consumed spirits on the planet. Mm-hmm. There's only a percent of it that's getting exported.
Right. And that's right? Just for listeners who don't know what that is. It's a Chinese distillate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's anytime people want to learn about the history of San Francisco. And there's been so much debate recently about like these vast changes to the Bay Area. And as like a, you know, Bay Area native, I'm sure when you come back to visit, you're like, yeah. Oh, this is freaking me out because mm-hmm. there's so many changes, but you still walk around parts of the financial district and, you know, North Beach and parts of the Mission where there's like sections that have not changed. Mm-hmm. And you can feel like, or you're near like the actual Mission itself, mm-hmm. Or out by like Ocean Beach and Golden Gate Park. There's just there's a part that has not been sort of like overrun by a town can't. New Orleans is a great example. A city can't survive with just repeating the same shit over mm-hmm. and over and over again. Like exactly. There has to be an influx of new. Mm-hmm. The issue is when that influx also washes out what makes that city great.
Exactly.
Right. Mm-hmm. So the, you know, what's happening now, like in Austin, what's happening in New Orleans is you have what makes those cities great, especially the connection between the two with art and live music. Mm-hmm. Right. You have a lot of people who produce that art and that live music that can't afford to live in that city anymore.
Right.
And so as they go out, like what makes New Orleans, New Orleans?
Yes.
And the fact that I go out and that music spills out on the street. I'm not talking about like Bourbon Street with, I'm talking yeah, about like yeah. any of these little bars that you pass by here on like Esplanade or
on French Street. Man. Yep, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, and that's something we actually, Donnie started doing a series on the show. We've done one episode so far and we're calling it NOLA Neighborhoods. Mm. And the whole idea of it is understanding that so much of the culture, the vast majority of the culture in New Orleans doesn't come from the French Quarter. And so the whole idea, and I mean, don't get me wrong, there's lots of culture in the French Quarter, but the people, you know, most musicians, for example, you know, so the music itself, people, the culinary traditions, the people that work in the service industry, these people, they come from other neighbor. If they're from here, they come from other neighborhoods in the city. And so part of the idea of, especially for listeners from out of town or new residents that are hearing, you know, folks hearing it on the podcast from out of town, of course, is to, when you come to New Orleans, trying to encourage you to go, you know, get out of the French Quarter and go see some of these neighborhoods, because it is quite literally like San Francisco, where you can quite literally go three or four blocks and you're actually in a whole new set of pockets, circumstances in a new culture.
Yeah.
And that's really, I think, important to highlight. And then when you start to get out to these neighborhoods and you do these things, like if you walk around North Beach, like you talk about, or, you know, the financial district, even for that matter, really anywhere in San Francisco, you start to get the flavor of the place. It's like an enchilada, man.
Nice.
How'd
done.
I do? Did I do nice. Okay on that one?
So blended.
Thank so you. Blended. So blended, man. It yeah. just like smooth, like a blended, beautiful enchilada pisco. All right, I'm going to let that
great
one go.
Great segue. Yeah.
Thank you, man. Thank
let
you.
Let that steep for a minute.
That, yeah.
Good Lord.
So,
by the way, now I know what it's like when I do that to other people. I just experienced that in reverse. Okay.
I'm giving you the Isaac from Love Boat 2 snap finger point, man.
It's all about perspective. Okay. That's good.
How about let's get into this last one, man. The Machu Pisco. We were talking about Lizzie and Melanie and yeah. the fine products that they
so,
do.
So same thing. I'm just like, I have to go back and listen to your podcast or your show with Lizzie. Like, those two ladies have done such a great job also for the category in general. And so beautiful, you know, inside and out, and positive, and have brought so many people into the fold for this category. And I'm so glad that it's that way, because a lot of people think of Machu Picchu, right? So it has that, it has like a familiarity to it. And there's a lot of times, like, if there's something that would be kind of a staple for a brand, you really hope that the people who are out there like pushing that category are people that you actually like, or mm-hmm. people that are doing a good job for that category.
Yeah,
right. And they're
right.
doing, of course, like a great job. And, I mean, I would put any of these products in front of someone for the first time. It's like, think Scotch whiskey. If someone's just like, oh, well, I don't really know Scotch, I'm not going to give them Lafroig 10
and
first.
And just go with a super peaty.
Right?
Yeah, right, exactly.
I'm going to give them something that's going to sort of like ease them into the category. Mm-hmm. Like Glenlivet 12 is one of those that I think that a lot of people who are, you know, Scotch people, they sort of like poo-poo the larger brands or the more well-known brands. But it doesn't mean that that product is not made extremely well.
Absolutely.
That it's not, yeah. not, you know, to the point of perfection as far as like the producer goes. But the thing about like space sides, like Glen, you know, the Glenlivet 12 that I really enjoy showing to people for the first time, it's what I call adult apple juice, right? Like if you're a big like Calvados fan, if you're a big like apple brandy fan, it has almost, it's like without the sweetness, but it smells to me like kindergarten apple juice juice box, right? And it's a familiar aroma that and that's what it's about, right? So like, why do people, like, why is Stranger Things so popular right now? It's because of like the age of people who have Netflix are like sucked into the 80s nostalgia.
Yeah, right.
Right? And so like, I just saw, you know, for those of you who follow Weird Al on Instagram, it's actually one of the greatest.
Oh, I had no idea.
It's
okay.
It makes sense. Mostly not self-promotion. It's mostly like ridiculous things that he sees. Like, and like, right now he's on tour, so he's posting a lot of like random stuff. It's very funny. And there's a point to this. Sunday of Tales. What?
Okay, it was like we were talking about kids, juice boxes, yes. Glenlivet 12.
Nostalgia.
Nostalgia. There
Stranger
it is.
Things. So apparently, like, one of the kids on Stranger Things was wearing like a Weird Al in 3D t-shirt.
Oh, yeah, okay.
On the show, which I haven't seen the season, but he, of course, like got a huge kick out of it and like posted something about it and then did something to like honor that character in like a later post. It's just very fun. People get sucked into that kind of thing. So think about that same thing with like smells and tastes and like things that remind you of your grandmother's kitchen or things that remind you of like a holiday meal.
Taste is mostly memory, right? So
yeah.
I mean, absolutely.
And mostly smell.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So like all you need is that smell and then you're going to, you know, fall into it. But mm-hmm. it's like a very early, what I feel is my first memory. There's no possible way, because I feel like I remember being on the top of a picnic bench or a picnic table, like in like my little baby seat thing, looking up at the trees in Yosemite. I was 3 months old. There's no way.
So yeah, right.
But there's photos of that, of like me staring like an idiot into the sky, like mesmerized by the trees in the sky. But there's no way that's my actual memory.
Right.
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 So my memory is created from like those photos. Your memories that you don't even know that you have, a lot of times come from smells and tastes and sights and things, and they all come together later at times you don't necessarily expect. There's something about this kind of thing when you're like smelling and tasting through spirits. Like my parents are not imbibers, right? I try and taste them on things and you know, they'll like them or they won't like them. They're just not big, like, alcohol people. So I don't have, like, a lot of, like, nostalgia. I don't have, you know, my grandfather loved schnapps, which I also, it was hilarious and always, like, smelled good and tasted horrible to me.
Right. Real schnapps. Right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I just want to make sure we're talking about that.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm sure those schnapps sponsors are coming to run into your show now. Or he would have, like, some sort of, like, scotch, right? And same thing, like, I didn't like that smell or taste as a kid. But to be able to introduce somebody to a category like Scotch whiskey, which people think is like way up here, like inaccessible to the you know, the normal person who like doesn't necessarily like even hard alcohol, to be able to give them something that they smell and they're like, oh, I'm rushed back with nostalgia for like apple juice box. Mm-hmm. They may still not like it once they taste it, but they're like, okay, I get this now. This is not this like iodine rubber cement thing that I thought all scotches were. It's the same thing with like these Piscos. There's nothing in this lineup of seven that I would not give to somebody for their first time trying Pisco.
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
They're
yeah.
all really easygoing, and they're all very different.
Yes. You know, I think, and that's a good point. I think one thing with the Machu Pisco that we're drinking, they're Quebranta. They have an enchilada, the La Diablada, which is a beautiful expression also. This, if I guess probably how I would say this is, of the seven, if I had to pick one, it might be this one as your first one.
Yeah, you're biased.
Well,
you're biased. Okay, it's fine. Listen, your audience doesn't know this, but that I went to have some of the sip of that glass. It's almost empty.
Yeah, I crushed that one.
Yeah.
you short poured me. No, you didn't.
No. I
but
did not.
The reason why, kind of some of the different flavor characteristics that we've been talking about with the other ones, a lot of those are very represented here. I mean, so there's a nice floral note to it. I get a kind of nice pear note. It's really well balanced. It's going to play well on cocktails. And all of these are that. So don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. But I'm just thinking, like, if you held a gun to my head and said, you must pick one to then give to somebody as their first Pisco, I'd have a hard time not saying this one. Just because I think it's one that would open you to a lot of the expressions. It kind of has a lot of those touchstone things in it.
Sure. Yeah. And it's I mean, again, for you, it's 100% bias. Don't believe a word he says, folks. It is bias. But, I mean, Lizzie is a charmer. So
I
get
it. All right.
Yeah. You're set for life on that one. But same thing. Like, when it comes down to it, if you really want somebody to like something, it doesn't have to be what I like.
No, absolutely.
What you
not.
Like. I want to give you something that, like, is going to bring you into that category and it's going to make you like it. So I like weird things. And I know that most people are not going to like weird things, but I'm definitely going to taste a bartender on something, on a different thing than I would a consumer. I would definitely do different for like a consumer who had never had that category before. Who's like, I've always wanted to like, you know, Pisco, but I never really liked it before. I've always wanted to like tequila. I'm going to introduce you in a very different way than a consumer who's just like, I really love, you know, I really love single malt Scotch whiskey. I've had the standard thing. Let me have something weird. I'm going to bring you Brian. I'm going to bring you, we're going to get weird. Mm-hmm. Right. And the same thing again, everything that's in this lineup has its own special thing. And there's nothing here that I wouldn't put in front of somebody first.
Exactly.
I 100% do that with all of these, but it's funny to have three blends that are all totally different from each other. And then we've got our single variety Torrentella here in the middle. And then three Quebrantas, that same thing.
Incredible diversity across those.
Totally, totally. Yeah. And, you know, if I ask someone, do you like things that are more floral? Okay, great. I'm going to pick that one. Do you like things that have like a little bit of like salinity or brine or something? Great. I'm going to choose that one. Right?
Yep.
But if they're like, I am afraid of all of these things, right? I don't know where to start. Then I'm going to start with what I think would be the easiest for them, regardless of whether or not it's my favorite.
And I think an important take-home message, and we got to wrap it up here, Donnie, is that, look, we may get it wrong out of the gate, right? If you and I bring one for you to try for the first one, it doesn't float your boat. Don't give up on the category. It's like we were talking about earlier, sort of saying, like, I hate Chardonnay is not a fair thing to the Chardonnay grape. There's a huge world of Chardonnay out there.
I will not drink fucking Merlot.
Yeah, I will not drink fucking Merlot. We actually just watched that movie for the first time in ages recently. Again, truly brilliant. Sideways, check it out. And we were talking about Weird Al Yankovic before. If you don't know who Dr. Demento is, kids, go look up who Dr. Demento is. There you go. Because that's where we got our first doses of Weird Al Yankovic.
Of nerd.
Yeah. But please, friends, go check out the Pisco category. If at first you don't succeed, try again, because we promise you will find something that you like.
Absolutely. There's so many different kinds, and you can try them straight up. If you're more of like, I want to ease into this category with cocktails, definitely go to the Catahoula Hotel here. Jewel of the South has like a brilliant new Pisco drink on their menu that just totally blew me away. There's that whole thing that I was actually surprised at how much crossover there is with like the deep South and tastes of the South that go along with Pisco.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which you could always go like South America, the South.
Oh, good one.
It's a good tie. It's a good tie. That's like a PR tie-in. But I will tell you that like the, like flavor profile wise, it works really well. It cuts through like a lot of like some of the fatty stuff that, that we love here. And the taste profile works well. And I couldn't believe how many Pisco drinks I saw around town. Like it was actually really impressive.
You're seeing it more and more here.
And then of course, if you want to do it at home.
Yeah. Go ahead and sit in Shaker and Spoon.
Yeah. You can always do go shakerandspoon.com before. I don't know if they're going to hear it before July 31, but you can always ping them and say like, hey, you know, I heard Brian's show. I heard Nola Drinks and I would really want to try the Pisco box. Can y'all still send that?
Cool. Awesome. So if you're here visiting in New Orleans, go check out some of the places, or if you live here, of course, go check out some of the places that Donnie just mentioned. And if you're not in the area and not planning on coming soon, go find Pisco at a bar or bottle shop near you. Mm-hmm. Bing. Donnie, thanks so much for being here, man. I appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, good. Hopefully I see you between now and next year.
Yeah, let's say December.
December.
Yeah. Cool. My sister's never been here.
Okay.
So, which is weird, but, you know, I'm just like, you got to come and visit New Orleans. And so
awesome.
I kind of want to be here to, like, get her in some trouble.
We'll be here waiting to help provide said trouble.
Fantastic.
That's our job. So that was Donnie Ronan, friends. Thanks for listening into the show this week. We're going to take a brief musical interlude, and I'll be back with my very brief parting shot. All right, everybody. Hey, thanks for listening into the show this week, friends. I do appreciate it, as always, you bet. And I hope you enjoyed the conversation there with Donnie. Definitely went a little bit longer at another shot with Nola Drinks, as we usually do, but it's such an interesting conversation with him, as you gathered. I hope you got something out of it as we kind of meandered around the topic of Pisco. So we're keeping our parting shot here really short, friends. It is a very interesting category. As you know, we talk about it a lot. You got some of it from a tasting angle and talking about different expressions that angle this time around. I'm a big fan, and I encourage you to get out there and try Pisco. And as I said towards the close of the last segment, you know, if you try one and it doesn't float your boat, don't give up on the category. There's a lot of variation out there. There's the blends, as we talked about. There's the puros, the single varietal ones. The way people, they're production methodology, it's pretty tightly controlled, but there is, of course, variation in style that changes by producer. So, you know, give the category a shot. Try it in different cocktails. Try substituting Pisco in for other clear spirits in one of your favorite drinks. It is one of my favorite after dinner, kind of late night, don't want anything heavy, just drop a pebble of ice in a pour of Pisco, you know, an ounce or two, something like that, and sip on it. I find it very, very enjoyable that way. From that little area of Peru, it is a big world of Pisco, friends. Go and check it out. That's our parting shot. Here's to you.